Now, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is working on its first ever standards for regulating the harmful chemicals known as PFAS. The new rules will set limits for how much of the chemicals can be present in the state's drinking water and surface waters. That's going to require sampling and testing of water systems, remediation if the standards aren't met. Environmental groups see it as a positive for public health and the environment, while businesses and local governments have raised concerns about how much it would cost to meet these standards. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about these new standards? Do you want tighter regulation on these chemicals? The EPA now is out with advisory guidelines as well. Join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Danielle Kading is a reporter at WPR's Superior Bureau. Danny, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on, Rob.
These standards have been in the works for a while. How did we get here?
Yeah, so back in 2019, Governor Tony Evers directed the agency, or the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, to develop standards to address PFAS contamination across the state. And then the Natural Resources Board signed off on developing those standards in January the following year. And then it's been about three years now since we started talking about this, since when they were finally approving standards through the Natural Resources Board, which are now set to take effect as soon as they go through the final steps in the process.
This gets complicated because we're talking about different kinds of water, whether it's surface or drinking water. There are actually different chemicals in this PFAS category. Big picture, Danny, when this thing kicks in, what changes?
Well, when this kicks in, this means that there will be a requirement for public water supplies to test for PFAS. And right now, it's about just really a fraction of the 11,000 public water supplies in Wisconsin have tested for PFAS. Some of them have urged the DNR to wait for federal standards for drinking water rather than proposing statewide limits on PFAS. And so now that this is happening, there will be a phase-in, a gradual phase-in of which communities or which systems will be required to test and how often and how that works.
Now, this had to be signed off on by a group of state lawmakers led by Republicans. They did say they'll do this. They could, as I understand it, maybe still suspend the standards if they don't feel they're being lawfully implemented. Can you just talk about the role that the state legislature is playing here?
Yeah, so basically once the Natural Resources Board moved these standards forward, it could go to the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules in the legislature. And that's basically led and controlled by Republican lawmakers. And so in the past, we've seen Republican lawmakers push back on attempts to regulate these chemicals. There were no objections raised this go around. So they're letting those take effect. And now it moves to the secretary for him to sign. That would be DNR Secretary Preston Cole. And then the rules will be submitted to Wisconsin Administrative Register, and then they'll take effect about a month after publication.
And then when they take effect, does that mean day one cities have to get out there and start testing, or how does it phase in a way that we're going to see it have an effect?
No. What we've heard before from the Wisconsin DNR as of late May is that potentially, as soon as November, we could see the largest public water systems begin testing for PFAS. And some of them have already begun testing or done this sampling already, like Madison, Milwaukee, Eau Claire, Wausau. Those communities that have 50,000 or more people would be required to test. And then it would go in through phases for each other community based on their population size.
Danny, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Danielle Kading, WPR reporter based in Superior, with us for a look at new state standards on PFAS chemicals in water. Now, just after these state standards got the go-ahead, the Environmental Protection Agency announced new advisory guidelines at the federal level for PFAS pollution. David Strifling is the director of the Marquette Law School's Water, Law, and Policy Initiative. Dave, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you again.
Okay, with these EPA advisories, we're talking parts per trillion for some of these PFAS chemicals, much narrower than what the state is working on. Can you give us a sense of the difference in scale that we're talking about here?
Well, it's orders of magnitude. And what caused all this is that EPA's previous guideline had been 70 parts per trillion for a couple of the PFAS compounds that we're focused on here. And that's where the NRB landed in terms of approving the DNR's rules, because it felt that the state standards should match the federal standards. Well, now the EPA has sort of, I don't want to say pulled the rug out, but dramatically changed the game board by saying, well, instead of 70 parts per trillion for those compounds, we're going to lower it to 0.004 parts per trillion for PFOA and 0.02 for PFOS. So again, that's orders of magnitude lower than where it was before. And it's also significantly lower than the detection limit, which I understand to be about 4 parts per trillion. So we're talking about really undetectable levels of compounds here. And the question for DNR is, what do we do now that our standard, our brand new standard, is orders of magnitude higher than what the EPA is now telling us is safe?
What do we know about why the EPA narrowed that by orders of magnitude, as you said?
Well, they just say that they focused on the science. You know, we had a conversation here at Marquette last week, and we had Secretary Cole here with the EPA Region 5 Administrator, Deborah Shore. And I asked Regional Administrator Shore that question, you know, what's taking so long? Why the big change? And she said, we're just focused on the science. And this is what the science is telling us. It takes time for us to do this. We're sorry we're not moving faster, but we're going to take the time to do it right. And, you know, I'm not a scientist. I don't pretend to understand all the explanation behind it, but that's what they're focused on.
And can you remind us why we're concerned about PFAS in our water? What are the health concerns that are leading these regulations?
Well, the first thing is that they're ubiquitous. It's very likely that if you and I were tested along with all of the listeners, these compounds would show up in our bloodstream. And pretty much that's true of every human being on the planet. And we know that they have significant health effects. They're carcinogens. They have significantly negative impacts on humans. And so they're in the environment, they're in our blood, and they cause lots of negative impacts on human health. And so I think everybody agrees on the need to do something about this. The disputes just come in at the margins, where we should set the limits, when they should kick in, who should be in charge, whether it's the state government or the federal government. That's what the dispute is about here.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Eric is with us in Lincoln County. Eric, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. Just a couple points. The NRB setting that number at 70 parts per trillion, everybody knew that number was way, way high. Anybody with any kind of common sense knew that that number was going to come in much lower from the EPA. And currently we have an NRB member who's more than a year expired from his term, yet he's still sitting on the board making these decisions. And then the other quick point is the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce suing to keep the DNR from being able to enforce the Wisconsin Spills Act. These two activities are extremely heinous when it comes to protecting our water. And I'm hoping some of these issues get straightened out and we start to accept what the real level of safe PFAS consumption is.
Eric, thanks a lot for that call. Dave, let's start with his second point, because people may see headlines about the DNR enforcing some kind of PFAS regulations. And that's under, as Eric referenced, the Spills Act, not these new regulations. What is going on there?
Yeah, so there we're talking about contamination primarily in groundwater, not in drinking water, although, of course, groundwater can become drinking water. And the question is, can DNR enforce what's called, as you said, the spills law against a business who's conducting a cleanup? And the specific issue in that lawsuit was whether midstream, in the middle of the cleanup, DNR could add a requirement for the business owner to clean up PFAS compounds. And that's what that lawsuit was all about. The Waukesha County Circuit Court judge said that DNR couldn't do that without having a standard in place, without having a list of hazardous substances that it would force a business owner to clean up. The way that stands right now is that the judge has stayed the effect of that ruling so that DNR can appeal it. So we're going to have to watch that one as that proceeds its way up through the chain of courts. It'll be at the Court of Appeals next. But I agree with the caller that that has some major implications for DNR's authority to regulate PFAS. No question about it, along with other substances as well.
And Eric also mentioned, and we've got an email from Matt in Madison along the same lines, mentioning Fred Preen, who is on the Natural Resources Board. His successor was appointed, never confirmed by the Senate, the state Senate. So he's still there, I think about a year into that now, and helping to set these policies. Is that a concern people are raising at this point?
Well, it's certainly a concern on both sides of the aisle. I don't have any, legal opinion on who's right and who's wrong, but that is a major controversy, yes.
Thanks for the call, Eric. We're talking to Marquette Law School adjunct professor Dave Strifling about new PFAS standards planned for Wisconsin, plus an advisory guideline from the Environmental Protection Agency. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have PFAS contamination in your community? How is it affecting you? Are you glad to see the state moving toward new regulations of these chemicals? Where do you think the level should be set? The EPA's very tight advisory guidelines, or what we have in Wisconsin? Call in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Dave Strifling, director of the Marquette Law School's Water, Law, and Policy Initiative. He's with us today for a look at PFAS regulations on Wisconsin water. The DNR is working on new guidelines, and there's recommended guidelines out now from the EPA, much more stringent. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on these new standards at the state level, these new recommendations from the EPA? Is this an issue in your community? Are you drinking water out of bottles because you can't drink the water out of your tap? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So, I don't know, it was probably about 10 years ago, we had the whole issue with the BPAs and the baby formula bottles, and the manufacturers claimed, well, people demanded clear bottles, so the only way they could give us clear bottles was they had to put BPA in it. But that's obviously proven false because we have clear baby bottles still without BPA in it. Now we're being told that, oh, you've got to have PFAS or PFAS in the fire suppression foam in order to make it work better. Well, what is better? How much better? 1%, 0.1%? Out at Truax, they probably dumped, in all the other airports that use this stuff, they probably dumped 1,000 times as much of this foam retardant to practice with it than they've ever used in practicality to fight an airplane fire. I can't even think of a report of an airplane fire out at Truax in the last 5 years, but it just seems like we're being duped into having to accept these chemicals, which now you've got Lakes Monona, Mendota, Wabisi. You can only eat one or two fish a month out of those things. And I wish the DNR, the state, would tighten up before these things get into our systems, before they get into the market.
Gotcha, Mike. I want to bring Dave Strifling in on this. Mike saying, can we stop using this stuff in the first place? He mentioned a common use of flame retardant, including at airports, but it's also lining nonstick pans, a lot of other uses. Are we working to get this stuff out of the product chain in the first place?
Yeah, it's a big issue. And we saw this with asbestos and a lot of other products along the way that in some cases, there just aren't any good substitutes, at least if the manufacturers are correct. And often what we see in environmental law is something called technology forcing. We want to force manufacturers to develop substitutes for these products by setting the limits lower and depend on our ingenuity, our technology, our R&D to come up with new solutions that aren't as toxic. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but that's the idea here.
Mike, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Dennis is with us now in Green Bay. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I lived in Marinette for a number of years, over 20 years, and during that time, all this PFAS was being hidden by the legislature or a legislator up there, and he worked with the companies, accepted campaign contributions, so PFAS kind of ran rampant up there. And now people are being that were exposed, and my children went to school there. I have two children that have thyroid problems. One had a appendiceal cancer, and they all went through school in the Marinette area. And I'm wondering, you know, is there anything going to be happening in terms of class action or something against these companies that dumped all these PFAS into the water? The high school in Marinette was right next to where they were doing testing with PFAS for fire suppression foam.
Dennis, thanks for the call. Sorry to hear about all that affecting your kids. Dave, are people connecting the dots, PFAS, to those sort of health conditions? And Dennis wonders, maybe class action lawsuits on the way?
Yeah, really, really sorry to hear about your family, Dennis. So there's a couple of different issues here. One is the kind of toxic tort suits for injuries and cancers and deaths that are coming from this. And the other is environmental cleanup suits to force the companies to clean up polluted water. And I foresee both of those expanding going forward in the future as more and more becomes known about the science. Now, the causation is really the hard part when you talk about toxic tort suits. How do you prove that what happened came from PFAS? And so that'll be the issue as opposed to some other cause. But on both of those fronts, you know, and at our event last week, DNR Secretary Cole and EPA Regional Administrator Shore both said, we will go after those companies. If we can tell who caused the problem, we're going to make them clean it up. And I think the same will be true on the toxic tort side. You're going to see more of that as the future comes.
Dennis, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Dave Strifling, director of the Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative, about regulations on these PFAS chemicals. PFAS, everybody else is saying. I never know which one to settle on. We heard, by the way, early on the morning show today from Deborah Shore with the EPA talking about this very issue. You can check that out in the archives. Dave, turning back to the EPA advisory guidelines, a keyword advisory. They're not binding on anybody, at least not yet. Is there a thought that they might be locked in and become an official federal regulation at some point in the future?
Well, it's a really interesting question because these advisory limits, they mean almost nothing and they mean everything all at the same time. As you said, they are advisory. They're non-binding. You can't enforce anything based on where these standards sit right now. But they certainly do form the basis for what states are doing, as we've seen in Wisconsin with the NRB approving standards for drinking water at a level that matched the then existing federal advisory limit. And I think you're also going to see that number become the basis for the enforceable maximum contaminant levels under the Safe Drinking Water Act that EPA is in the process of putting in place right now. Now, that's a process that can take some time. But I think this is a very significant number overall, just because it has the scientific backing to form the basis for what both the states and the federal government are likely to do. And to answer your other question, Rob, about when are federal standards coming, I think you're likely to see something in the next year or two. Now, that won't be immediately enforceable. There is a period of time that public water systems have to comply with EPA limits, but it's coming sooner rather than later, at least if we believe what the EPA is telling us.
Even with the DNR guidelines, which again are way less stringent than this advice from the EPA, what is it going to take for local communities, for local water systems to comply with it? Is it going to be a challenge?
It will be, especially for the smaller systems. If you're a small system already struggling with budget, I've been reading about how the prices of everything is going up from groceries to gasoline. Well, local governments are hit with that too. And if you are one of those smaller systems and you know you come back with a large number for PFAS in your system, I think the DNR's advice is to drill a new well. Well, that's expensive for one thing, and there's no guarantee that it's not pulling from the same source and won't be similarly contaminated for another. So you know, again, it's a problem that everyone agrees something needs to be done. But when the rubber meets the road, it's not that easy to find a solution. You know, the bigger systems might be able to treat for it, install new treatment processes. But that's also an expensive proposition and one that might be out of reach for smaller systems. So in coming up with the rule, DNR did prepare cost estimates of, you know, how many systems it thought was likely were likely to be affected and what the resulting cost might be. But we really have no idea how extensive the number is going to turn out in the end.
Now, this problem has been a long time in the making, and these chemicals don't really break down, not quickly, certainly by a human time span. Are we going to be dealing with stuff for, what, decades to come?
You know, it's like a lot of environmental problems, lead laterals, chlorides. This stuff, even if we turn off the faucet right now, the bathtub is still full. Carbon dioxide is another example of that. So, yeah, I think this is a problem that's going to be with us for a long time. We're finding out a lot more about these emerging contaminants, PFAS included, as we go. And we just have to do the best we can. But this is not something that is going to go away overnight.
And very briefly, what are you watching for next?
Well, I think the next big domino to fall will be enforceable standards, maximum contaminant levels under the Safe Drinking Water Act issued by the federal government. When that comes, all the states will have to fall into line.
Dave, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
That's David Strifling, director of the Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative. He was with us today looking at the impact of new PFAS standards set to go into place here in the state, regulating the so-called forever chemicals, plus new EPA guidelines. Earlier, we heard from WPR reporter Danielle Kading. You can follow her reporting on this issue at WPR.org.